And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here. Welcome to the last Friday before training camp. It's One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glad with you. As we are heading down the thruway in about less than 48 hours, it looks like a lot of people here at One Bills Drive got a big head start on us. This place is a ghost town today.
It is empty.
There's nobody around. Here. We're the last of the Mohicans, I think. We'll be down there on Sunday for the first practice and getting ourselves settled in for training camp. One Bills Live will be broadcasting there on Monday. Steve will be back at that time as the whole crew will be out there rocking and rolling as the players begin their final preparations for the 2022 season. I walked in and I was, because earlier this week, some veterans kind of came in early, even though their report day is technically tomorrow at camp. And there's probably about 15 or 20 of them just kind of milling around, getting some workouts in, that kind of stuff. The rookies were here early in the week before they headed out down the thruway to St. John Fisher. But today, it's just, there's nobody here.
There is nobody here. I walked in, I ran into somebody, and they're like, "You're not at training camp already?" I was like, "No, we got a show to do, and then I'm going to go."
Right. So we will be joining the rest of the crew down there in due time as the team will be on the field for the first time Sunday morning, 9:45 practice, and there'll be a lot for Maddie and I to cover for BuffaloBills.com on Sunday. Namely, Coach McDermott will be addressing the media on Sunday. Then there will be practice, and then I believe Brandon Bean is speaking also on Sunday as camp opens. So a lot to cover, and we'll have it covered for you wall-to-wall on BuffaloBills.com. So keep pulling that up on your Bills app on Sunday for updates. The Bills, as we know, Maddie, are widely considered the Super Bowl favorite in the AFC at the very least. And their first game of the season will be against the defending Super Bowl champion, Los Angeles Rams. And in an elaborate ceremony last night, as only Los Angeles can do, the Rams received their Super Bowl rings. And I'm telling you, this ring stuff, it's getting out of hand, Maddie.
It's pretty swanky.
And no pun intended with that.
Those are big diamonds on there, too.
So here's the thing. Like, I watched some of the footage, saw some of the guys flashing the rings. Mm-hmm. These things are so gargantuan.
It would probably be the size of my hand almost.
Well, like, you can't hold your hand up
it's too
without
heavy.
The two fingers, you know, your pinky and your middle finger getting completely pushed out of joint to get that thing all the way down on your finger, even for big football player guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Aaron Donald
that
our MSG viewers are looking at, and it looks gigantic on him. I mean, he looks like he's got a plum on his finger. It's ridiculous. So yeah. I did a little research as to the details of the rings.
20 carats.
There's Von Miller. He got his. Yes, you're right. 20 carats.
Which is, that's insane, the amount of money that they put into these Super Bowl rings. Yeah. I mean, yes, you deserve it, but 20 carats is like a huge, huge
amount of diamonds. Yeah, 20 carats of white diamonds set on white and yellow gold. The shape of the ring is supposed to mimic the architectural and design elements of SoFi Stadium. Now, I didn't know this. It includes a removable top. It opens to reveal SoFi Stadium's lower bowl, and the field in the stadium actually has remnants of the actual turf.
No, it wait.
In the ring.
I didn't read that part yet.
So the green.
What?
Yeah, so the lower. So the bowl of the stadium is inside the flip top of the ring, and then the field contains, the mini field inside the ring, contains actual remnants of the turf from the field for the Super Bowl.
That's next level.
But I mean, where are we going from here, though? You're going to have to go brass knuckle.
What are the Bills going
to have? You're going to have to go brass knuckle style and like put it on two fingers because these things are gargantuan.
Absolutely huge. And then like
I'd love to know how much those weigh. We got to be pushing like half a pound, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what were you going to say?
I was going to say you read into the details more because the Rams wrote an article about it. And just like the fact that the ring has 1.12 carats of round diamonds to represent January 12th, which has three key dates. One of the dates is the hiring of Sean McVay and then moving the Rams to Los Angeles. So there's all these like teeny tiny details that are meaningful to the Rams and would be meaningful to any team to have tiny details seen throughout the ring that are in this ring. I think it's really cool.
I just feel like every year there's this one upsmanship from the previous year. I don't know if you can go any bigger. They're so dang big. I mean, you can't even call that a ring. I don't know what you call it. I mean, remember as a kid you had the ring pops. I mean, they're getting that big. They're bigger than the ring pops now, which were ridiculous candy things on a ring. I mean, it's out of hand. I don't know how you can continue to outdo the previous year, but the Rams did it, so I guess credit to them.
What's next? Watches? Like, are we always going to keep Super Bowl rings? Because these things, like you said, they're getting so big. Are you going to move on?
Well, I'm just thinking you got to go brass knuckle style and put it on two fingers. Because,
okay.
I mean, you and I, are you kidding me?
It would be the size of my
half
palm.
Our hand.
It would be like an orange on my hand or an apple.
It really would. So they got their rings. Good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully the Bills are doing that at this time.
Hopefully the Rams don't get another one next year.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
AFC East news. As we know, all offseason, everybody's been watching, wondering, who the hell is going to be the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots?
Nobody.
And Bill Belichick refuses to name one. And we've come to find out he hasn't named a defensive coordinator either. Joe Judge, former head coach of the Giants, who has largely coached on special teams in his coaching career, is going to be the offensive assistant / quarterbacks coach. Matt Patricia, former Patriots defensive coordinator in another life and former Lions head coach, is the senior football advisor / offensive line. And then Bill Belichick's son, Steve Belichick, and former Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo, who have been on the staff for a couple of years now, are linebackers coaches, even though it was widely believed that those two kind of shared defensive coordinator duties. So New England doesn't have an OC or a DC by title. And all this has done is pique the interest of the New England media to like, they're going to be watching the coaches on the sideline during preseason games more than the actual game on the field to find out who the hell's calling the plays over there.
Are we surprised by this? I mean, Bill Belichick did allude to it that, okay, we're not going to name an OC or a DC for this year. But are you surprised that this is the route that they're going?
I don't know. They always do these wacky things. They think they're ahead of the curve or smarter than everybody else. And then you have Patriots fans on Twitter going, yeah, everyone else is playing checkers. Guess what Belichick's doing? And I'm just like, okay. I mean, we're talking about coaching titles here. Seriously?
Somebody's still going to call the plays.
So Steve has had a number of theories on this. His latest theory is if you don't have a coordinator, you don't have to make him available to the media. And we know that Belichick has not been very accommodating to the New England media, just to ask any New England media member. I don't know if that's the reason. There was another school of thought that if you don't name a successor to the position formally, then you don't have to go through the whole interview process, which, oh, by the way, includes the Rooney Rule now for coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
They never named anybody, so they didn't have to go through an interview process. So they just leave the titles nameless, don't have coordinators, so to speak, and then don't have to go through an interview process, which I think is a little backwards and not very, shall we say, inclusionary. But I don't know if that's the motive, so it's hard for me to say. But it's interesting, to say the least.
Belichick is going to Belichick. He's going to do his own thing, whatever he wants to do. Not name coordinator. Somebody's still going to call plays at the end of the day.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm sure people will find out eventually who is calling the plays on offense and defense, and they'll take it from there, I'm sure. I'm confident the New England media will be observing the sidelines and the coach's booth with binoculars and Zoom lens cameras to find out who the heck's calling the plays. I don't know. We didn't get to this yesterday, Maddie, but the demand in Germany for the NFL game over there has reached unprecedented heights. The league says they have been overwhelmed by ticket demand for their first regular season game in Germany. As we know, November 13th, Bucks Seahawks. Tom Brady is a huge draw over there, as you might imagine. But when tickets went on sale online Tuesday this week, 770,000 people simultaneously logged on. So they've only got 75,000 seats in the place and a capacity of 75,000 for international games. So it's they're already selling tickets on the secondary market, and they're going for tens of thousands of dollars. It's insane. Now, the NFL has said all along, as part of their overseas business model, they want their international business to make $1 billion a year by the next decade. They want to be at like $1 billion in revenue just from overseas. If this is the demand,
keep having games in Germany, you're going to make your $1 billion pretty quick.
They're going to get there fast. They're going to get there really fast. Two more games, as we know, in the UK at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Last October, the two games in London attracted more than 120,000 fans, and Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I believe, only seats 60,000. So they were full capacity for those two games as well. As I mentioned, Tom Brady is a huge draw over there in Germany, according to an NFL spokesperson. So they're not going to have any trouble filling that place for that November game. That should be like week 12 or 13, I think, when the Bucks play the Seahawks over there. We know some teams have already reported to training camp, Maddie. There were a couple of players, notable players, who wound up on active PUP, physically unable to perform due to lingering injuries and the like. The Jets' Mekhi Becton, who we know only played one game last year because of a knee injury, and that is still not, I guess, ready to be cleared on a physical. So that saga is going to continue. The New York media will be all over that. And then Atlanta linebacker Deion Jones. Those are the two players that wound up on active PUP. Active PUP, not a big deal. They can come off of that list at any point in time right after they pass a physical. Boom, they're practicing. So we'll see how long it drags on for those two. It'll be interesting to see if Tre'Davious White is a candidate for that. He could very well be put on active PUP if they don't believe he is ready or can be cleared for practice. So we'll have to see where that goes. We also know that Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas went on active PUP too. I did not see that defensive end Marcus Davenport went on there, so I don't know the nature of his injury, but another starting player for the Saints not going to be practicing right away.
When are we going to see Michael Thomas again?
Well, they were just reporting. Steve and I were talking about it in NFL News and Notes earlier this week. They were just saying that they're confident he's going to be back for training camp. How much of training camp, they didn't say, but they expect him to be ready to roll week one. This guy hasn't played since 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, we're close to 2 years.
You would think PUP wouldn't even be in the conversation for him at this point, but the fact that it still is.
Well, he had the lingering issues, as you know. He had to have second, and I know he had a second surgery. I'm not sure about a third, but he definitely had a second surgery last year, which is what cost him the rest of the 2021 season after it was expected he would miss at least half of it. He ended up missing all of it. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking about one of the best receivers in the game. And then when he does come back, is he going to be the same guy?
I'm really interested to see what he looks like when he comes back.
Yeah, no guarantees for sure. We told you yesterday the Browns were working out Josh Rosen and A.J. McCarron as they looked for an additional quarterback for training camp. Cleveland ultimately signed Josh Rosen to a one-year deal. Matty, Rosen was with the Falcons last year. This is now his fifth team in 5 years in the league.
Somebody pointed out, I do not know who it was on Twitter. I want to give them credit, so if I can remember who it was, I'll let you guys know. But if you go to Josh Rosen's Twitter, it says he's a quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons on his bio. His Twitter AVI, his picture of himself is from draft day, and his header picture is of him as a Miami Dolphin.
Oh, my gosh.
So just a little
maybe he's poking fun at himself. I don't know.
How many teams he's bounced around to.
I guess when
you
played for five teams in 5 years, you need to have a sense of humor. I quizzed myself, and I was able to get all five teams because it went Cardinals, Dolphins, Niners, Falcons, and now the Browns. If he does five more, I probably won't get the whole list. But it's hard not to feel for him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he gets thrown out like yesterday's fish with just about every team, it seems. You know, you're a top 10 pick of the Cardinals. The next year, you're out the door because they like this guy better when they have the number one pick. I would love for somebody to go back through the history of the league and find a point in time where after the team picked a quarterback with a top 10 pick, the very next year picked a quarterback again in the top 10. I got to believe we'd be able to count on one hand how many times that's happened in the 100-year history of the league.
I would think so. That's
highly unusual.
You usually don't have those draft picks
and
either.
Josh Rosen was one of the unfortunate ones to experience that. But yeah, as you said, he's only 25.
Mm-hmm.
The general consensus here is he's going to be third string at best, and that's only if he does better than Josh Dobbs, who's on the roster behind Jacoby Brissett and Deshaun Watson as well. The general thought here is this is just an extra arm in the event that Watson is suspended while training camp's going on. And, you know, you're going to need an extra arm in camp with all the throwing you're doing, scout team, et cetera. Not to mention the fact preseason games, because if you know you're not going to have Watson for the first eight games or whatever the heck it is, you got to protect Jacoby Brissett. He's probably not playing a whole lot in that last preseason game at all. And because you want to keep him healthy, you don't want to get down to number three. So Dobbs and somebody else would presumably have to play a lot in preseason game number three. So you bring Rosen in now, you kind of get him up to speed, and then off they go. Alternate helmets, Matty. They're the soup du jour in the NFL, apparently. We saw the alternate black helmet for the Carolina Panthers earlier this week. We saw the Bengals white Bengal tiger helmet. Ooh.
Scary.
And now the Jets have unveiled an all-black helmet with dark green lettering on it. I don't know how I feel about this one.
It's fine. We talked about this earlier before the show started. I'm fine with alternate helmets. Like, cool. If the Bills got an alternate helmet, I would like it as well. I think black is fine. I think the Cincinnati Bengals tiger striped one is fine. It just doesn't do it for me as much as uniforms. I think if you're really going to do an alternate helmet, I would actually like to see artwork on the helmet rather than really just changing the color or adding some stripes. Like, what about doing something surrounding where the team plays or the city they're located in or something with position groups? I don't know. I just think changing a color, adding one thing here or there is not enough for me to go goo-goo gaga over it.
They're taking a page out of college football's book, no question about it, because as we know, the last 3 or 4 years, a lot of these major college programs, Power Five conference programs, have unveiled new helmets during the course of the season. You know, first everything was metallic colored. Then they went to the matte finish. That was a big thing for the last couple of years. And, you know, for college kids, make no mistake, in many cases, it's all about the swag that, you know, you can wear out on the field. Look good, feel good, play good, that whole thing. At the NFL level, I don't know that it's necessary. You want to feature a helmet from your past as a franchise? You know,
cool.
That's cool. Knock yourself out.
I get that.
But some of these alternate helmets now, the color rush thing with the jerseys, that was great. Love it. Love the Bills red jerseys. As a matter of fact, more often than not, they go red on red when they wear it. I'd love to see just red jersey, white pants at some point in time. And I don't know that they've, I don't think they've done that in a regular season game. So, because it's always been color rush and it's full red top to bottom. But, these new helmets, black and matte colored and metallic and all this, it's kind of gimmicky for me. So I would tend to agree with you on that. I'm just, okay, nice. You know, you want to change it up a little bit, knock yourself out for a couple of games.
It's fine. Whatever.
Like what the Giants are doing, that's cool. Going back to their 80s and 90s uniforms, their 80s and 90s helmets with the word Giants on the side with this line underneath, that's cool. Like, I'm all about that. But, you know, just having a helmet and matching it with a jersey for a couple of games that has no rhyme or reason. Like, even if you had a team that, let's just say, changed their color scheme somewhere in their history, and you want to go back to that kind of helmet with a different color, cool, you know, because you're, you know, it's nostalgic. I don't know. And the other thing is, you're not selling helmets to fans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At least you could sell alternate color jerseys to fans. Nobody's buying black metallic helmets. Like, I don't know.
People would.
Maybe I'm just missing the mark on this, and that's why I'm not in marketing. But, you know, I don't know. I was just as unimpressed as you were with some of this. So it is what it is, I suppose. Oh, and I forgot. So the Cowboys, too. They're doing throwback white helmets for their Thanksgiving game. The old white helmet with the star on it. They're going back to that. Now that's fine. You're going back to the old days. I like that. I enjoy nostalgia. So that I like better than what these teams are doing with these futuristic helmets and everything.
I'm fine with it. If you're going to do it, okay, cool. I'm a fan of it, but just take it to the next level if you're really going to, like, I don't make it a big deal. It's just a helmet. I don't know. I think the jerseys are cool. If you're going to change the jerseys, I'm all in about that. But
yeah, me too.
If you're just going to make a helmet black or you're going to put tiger stripes on a helmet, no big deal.
Yeah. It's a shame the Bengals can't tap into the whole Siegfried and Roy thing out in Vegas now that they're no longer an act. They used to have the white Bengal Tigers out there. Be kind of cool if they were able to rope them into some pregame deal or some halftime performance. That'd be embracing your full tiger there. That'd be pretty good. We do want to get to the OBL Friday fan mailbag, as we do every week. This is your last opportunity to get your questions in for stuff on the Bills prior to training camp. So we'll have to see what you have in mind with respect to the Bills roster, maybe the coaching staff, or something NFL-related at large. We're here to answer any and all of those questions at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. So, got an open line for you if you want to chime in there, or you can go to the mailbag and send us something. So we'll start with the mailbag here because these came in a little bit earlier, and we'll lead off with Tiffany, who says, it feels like a make-or-break camp for Cody Ford. What do you think his chances are to make it on the final 53-man roster? He's going to be pushed. I think that's safe to say. The Bills brought in a lot of veteran linemen on one-year contracts. Now, granted, Darrell Williams, John Feliciano, no longer here. Those guys came in last year as starters, and now they're not even on the roster. So there were some holes to fill. Roger Saffold's in. I think the general consensus is he's probably going to start next to Deion Dawkins. And then you have Ryan Bates, who finished the season as a starter. He's back in the fold. So now you're talking about a reserve role, unless Cody Ford can unseat somebody. And then at that point, his competition is people like Greg Manns, who plays center guard. You're talking about David Kessenberry, who plays guard tackle. So there are people in the mix with skins on the wall and starts in the league. So, yes, he's going to be up against it. And how well he can do in camp figures to directly correlate to whether or not he's on the 53-man roster or not.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk or anything like that for Cody Ford to make the final 53. I do feel for the guy because he's had injuries in and out of seasons, on and off of active rosters because of his injuries. He's somebody who was drafted highly by the Buffalo Bills, and it's kind of been unfortunate to see his career be filled with so many, not that he's had a million, but he's had a few injuries that have definitely set him back from what he's obviously wanted to do in his first few years in the NFL. So I want to see him have a healthy chance at earning a spot on the field, whether it's rotational or whether it's a starting role. Starting role, I think, would be pretty tough to earn on this roster based on what we have right now. But I would love to see him be healthy this year, make the final 53, and have some sort of a role. I'm cheering for him because I like the guy. He's been fun to get to know, and it's been a bummer to see him be hurt quite a bit.
Yeah, and I also forgot Greg Van Roten, who signed late in free agency, veteran guard, formerly of the Jets, also in the mix. So it's pretty stacked behind that first group of linemen. So whether you're keeping 9 or you're keeping 10, you're talking about position flexibility helping players a lot. And yes, as a rookie, we saw Cody Ford play some tackle. Then he moved inside to guard. Whether they still believe he could be a guard tackle flex player, I don't know. That's probably a good question that we should ask Sean McDermott or Brandon Bean, because almost everyone else that they have signed, Greg Manns has position flex, Kessenberry has position flex. Not sure about Van Roten. I think he's mostly been a guard. I'll have to check into his history to see if he's played some tackle, but a lot of these guys have played multiple positions. To me, that in an even situation, you know, if Cody Ford's camp is just as good as Greg Manns' camp, and Manns can play two positions and they only see Ford as a guard, that can tip the scales in favor of one over the other.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think back to, okay, when Cody Ford was healthy and when they were trying to figure out, you know, what's the right spot for him? Is he going to be a guard in the NFL? Is he going to be a tackle? And they're rotating him back and forth and in and out. And then it kind of transitioned into, okay, we want to find one spot for Cody Ford. We don't want him to be rotating in and out so he can really get a feel for the position. But it'll be interesting to see if that has changed once he's back.
Yeah. And I think everybody's rooting for Cody Ford to kind of bounce back and be the player that I think everybody thought he could be. So we'll see what happens. We'll see where it goes. And, yes, it unquestionably is a gigantic camp for him. Back to the mailbag, and Daniel asks, how many O-linemen and D-linemen do you think will be on the 53? Why don't I take the D-lineman? You take the O-lineman. You tell me how many O-linemen you think. I'll go D-line here. I am going to say 9 defensive linemen. I think.
Did we keep 10 last year?
I'm trying to remember.
We kept double digits. I don't know if it was 10 or 11.
Oh, that's right. It was fat. But then didn't the number come down after the first couple of weeks? It didn't stay. For some reason, I'm thinking it didn't stay that way. Was there an injury designation too? I can't remember. I'm inclined to say 9, 5 N's, 4 DTs, because I think with your expanded practice squad, you can just stash people there. So I am going to say 9 defensive linemen, 5 defensive ends, 4 defensive tackles. And the reason I go lighter at the defensive tackle position is because you have players that can kick down inside on passing downs like Greg Rousseau and Shaq Lawson, if he's able to make the roster. What about offensive line, Manny?
I would say defensive line would where you would maybe keep more players. So if you're going to say 9 on defensive line, I would probably say 9 or 10 on offensive line, too.
Okay.
I wouldn't go more than that. I think similar to what you said with the practice squad, how you can get guys on and off of it, I think it would be easy to keep nine and, right. and do your job. Maybe they would keep one more this year compared to last year because of the volume of players that they did sign in yeah. the offseason. I wonder if they do keep an extra guy just because they signed so many guys this offseason to the offensive line. I don't know if that also is kind of a tip of the hat to how this offensive line may look a little bit different this year in terms mm-hmm. of rotating or in terms of blocking schemes, you name it, with our new offensive line coach, Aaron Cromer. So maybe they keep one more guy because of that, because you have a new offensive line coach, because you may have some new blocking schemes that you're going to fold in and you think an extra guy is going to help you there.
Yeah, possible. I believe they kept 10 offensive okay. linemen last year. I think that's what it was. And part of the reason was because of the game day rosters designation, you could carry an extra active player provided it was an eighth offensive lineman. And so I think that prompted a lot of teams to carry one extra lineman to boot, knowing there was an extra player they could dress on game day, provided it was an eighth offensive lineman. So, yeah, I would guess 10 and 9 would probably be where we'd
the
have
Bills
O-line
did
and
keep
D-line.
11 defensive linemen.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to think. Like
that was when they announced the 53, though. I didn't. Yeah, I don't know if the number changed.
Yeah,
that was
sometimes
just
it
when
does
they
shift
announced
and,
the 53.
Right. Sometimes it does shift and change by the time you get to the first game. But, yeah, that is interesting for sure. We have to take a break here. Callers at 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Hang tight. We're opening up the phone lines for the Friday Fan Mailbag next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are on a Bills Friday Fan Mailbag Day. And we're getting right to the phones here at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Open line for you there, but we lead off today with Dennis in Blaisdell. Dennis, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd like to speak about the offensive side of the ball the most, and that you have a new offensive coordinator in Dorsey. Now, as a quarterback, he had up and down career. But with a brand new quarterback in here, if he's not on the same page as Josh Allen, then they're going to have problems, and that's going to be the biggest question. People don't realize how they have an offensive coordinator and a quarterback has to gel. They have to almost have the same set of eyes on and off the field, in the training room, and everything. So I think that's going to be the key to the offense. Key to the defense. Sign Poyer. We're already down White. One man makes a heck of a difference. We've seen the difference in Kansas City. They played their hearts out. Sorry they lost, but that's the way it is. Great show. This morning they talked about no contact in preseason. This is football. It's still football. We have enough of that in the Pro Bowl game. It's ridiculous. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate that. I will say, Ken Dorsey isn't new to the team. He's been the quarterback's coach for the last three seasons. So he has worked very closely with Josh Allen each of the last 3 years as his quarterback's coach. He's been in every film room with him for the better part of the last 3 years. He has been the man on the sidelines on game days, talking to Josh when Brian Daboll, as the play caller, was up in the coach's booth. So they have a very strong working relationship already. So I'm not worried about that in the least in terms of them being on the same page.
And one thing that was really discussed over OTAs and mandatory minicamp was, you know, talking through the headset, communication, verbalizing things, how that's going to sound. Josh, you know, talked about it's going to be interesting and new to listen to a new voice. I really want to get comfortable with that and the cadence of how he speaks and how he calls plays. So I think that's the thing that is probably not probably, was missing. And that's what they worked on a lot during OTAs and mandatory minicamp. And if you looked over at those two, really at any point in a practice when they were near each other, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of communication, not saying that this is any different than how it has been in the past since Ken Dorsey was his quarterback's coach for a few seasons. But the thing that they're going to have to perfect is the verbalizing, is the communication, is the cadence. Josh Allen getting used to that. Ken Dorsey also getting used to that.
And then with respect to the lack of contact in training camp, unfortunately, Dennis, that's collectively bargained by the players' union in terms of when they're allowed to put pads on, which pretty much isn't for the whole first week of camp. They can only go 5 days, and then they have a mandatory day off. These elements of training camp now, they have all been collectively bargained by the Players Association. I understand, you know, you say it's football, and it is, but the Players Association has gotten some things that they have wanted to preserve the players' careers longer by taking hits off their bodies, and it seems as though the league and its ownership is fine doing that in the training camp setting, in OTAs and minicamp. I mean, when I was covering this team a long time ago, they had pads on in OTAs. They had pads on in minicamp. Minicamp was 3 hard days of work and full contact before the new CBA came in 2011, and then subsequent ones after that. So it's all geared towards prolonging players' careers, keeping players healthier through the course of the offseason so they're ready for the regular season. Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Joe in Buffalo next. What do you have for us, Joe? Are you there?
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Yes, I would like to know why the Buffalo Bills doesn't wear their red helmets anymore.
Okay, valid question. I get it. I've actually seen a lot on social media, Maddie, about this. Fans are pining.
They want them to bring it back.
For the old red helmets of the 80s and 90s, and even the early 2000s. And I get it. It's a cool helmet. Always has been. And I see people, like, putting red helmets on pictures of Josh all the time on social media. It's pretty funny. People are getting pretty creative with it. We have not heard hide nor hair of anything.
I don't know. They could release something tomorrow or the next day if they're going to do an alternate helmet. I have no idea.
Yeah, we have heard no rumblings of anything about that in any capacity. So because of that, I would be inclined to think that is not on the table, but stranger things have happened. I really don't know what direction that's going to go. What I do know, though, is when you want to do something like that, for example, the Jets black helmet that they just unveiled on social media today, that's a 2-year process. Mm-hmm. You have to put in a request to the league, hey, we have an alternate jersey, helmet, et cetera, that we want to utilize in this season. And you have to start the process 2 years in advance to get approval of not only changing the helmet or the jersey, but also the design has to be approved by the league, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not just like, hey, let's make some black helmets or hey, let's just slap a red helmet on out there. It takes a lot more red tape to get it done at the league level and get it approved. So I don't know. We had not heard of anything about this in terms of the planning stages required to get something like that through. So if somebody pinned me down and said, what do you think? I would say probably not, but you just never know. Maybe they've kept it under lock and key tremendously, and we just don't know anything. Back to the phones, though, and to Adam in Rochester next. What do you got for us, Adam?
Hey, Brownie. I just wanted to let you know, you guys made a comment that said you're not selling helmets to fans, and I want to tell you guys are completely wrong with that. Riddell has been making licensed variations of every team's helmets for years. And folks like me, folks like any of the collectors, I'm a big collector on Facebook. A lot of people listening might recognize me. My name's Adam Go Bills Blossom on there. But I collect hundreds of mini helmets and full-size helmets that are signed by players that are just different variations. And they're thirsty for alternate. So the comment of you're not selling to fans is 100% incorrect. Some fans' only collection is helmets and alternate-style helmets and things like that. And furthermore, Riddell last year released the red version of the new helmets. So I think that's a little bit of a tease to what is probably, hopefully, going to be released as the helmet this year.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see as far as this year goes. I would tend to put you, though, in terms of your collecting, Adam, I would put you not in the mainstream majority of the general fan. The general fan wants a jersey. The general fan wants a hat. Are there collectors out there of helmets? Absolutely. People like you, yes, they're out there. And for the people that want autographs, yes, mini helmets are popular. I get it. I still wouldn't – I don't think helmets touch jerseys in terms of sales. They don't come close. Why? Because you get a helmet and it sits on your shelf. And I think fans want a jersey they can wear to the game. And that's why jerseys far outpace helmets. So – maybe we misspoke to a certain extent, but I thought what I said was you don't market helmets like you do jerseys because they just don't sell as many of them. Not to mention the fact that it's a lot cheaper to produce a jersey than it is to produce a helmet. I know they have a partner in Riddell that does all that, but I would say for the mainstream fan, it's about the jerseys more than it is about the helmets. I'm not saying there isn't a pocket of you that don't exist. You're proof of it, but I just don't think your numbers come close to what the number of people that buy jerseys are, and I think that's the point we were trying to make. Let's go to, I think this is Lynn on a cell. Lynn, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, hi, Chris. You were saying you wouldn't mind seeing red jerseys with white pants.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not allowed. If whatever color you have for your jersey for Color Rush cannot be worn with any other color.
Right. I know that. But I still, it doesn't mean I don't want to see it. I want to see a red jersey with white pants. I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, it would. But unfortunately.
I wonder if we can get past what was deemed the Color Rush thing and just say, hey, what would look cool this week? And just go red. Because I think red jersey, white pants would be killer. I don't know why, but
Actually, Josh told me that he would have liked red jersey with white pants, but he didn't get his wish either.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I appreciate you passing that along to us. But, yeah, we knew that's why you've always seen the all reds, because it's the Color Rush uniform. But I just think with a red jersey in between a white helmet and white pants and then red socks on the bottom, that would just pop.
I'm for it. They've been you would think by now Color Rush jerseys you can just – throw on into the rotation and do whatever you want.
And combo how you want to combo.
Yes,
that's
exactly
what I was kind of getting at there. I would really hope they would kind of clear the deck for that. I mean, my God, you got players wearing almost any number under the sun now. What's the difference if you wear white pants with the red jersey instead of the red pants? I don't think you're really screwing anybody up with that. We have to take a break here, but we're taking more of your phone calls next, as it is OBL Fan Friday Mailbag. So more of your questions coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, right back to the phones we go here on the Friday Mailbag here on One Bills Live. And we go to Brian in Buffalo next. What do you got for us, Brian? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So listen, I'm looking. I'm a longtime Bills guy from back in Joe Ferguson days. I love listening to you guys on the radio, you and Maddie, and when Tasker's on, it's great fun. But I'm looking at yards after catch. I thought the Bills struggled with that last year. Then I heard a stat that said they were dead last. And I think with a little bit more speed on the offensive line, maybe with Saffold, with a guy like Cook who can get out and break loose a little more, with an option of having a couple of tight ends and busting guys out, maybe getting Singletary get loose a little more, I think they can pick up their yards after catch a significant amount. I think that'd be a big part of making that offense click even that much more. And it saves Josh from having to, you know, he doesn't have to fling the ball down the field all the time, but it will open up so that, you know, when you got to worry about yards after catch, all of a sudden you're getting single coverage out of the ends. And then you got some big numbers possible there. So just wonder what you were thinking.
Yeah, Maddie, you want to take that first there?
Yeah, we talked about yards after catch a little bit yesterday when we were discussing, you know, what player on offense could be the difference maker in 2022. And Jameson Crowder, a lot of people chose him. A lot of people chose James Cook. And reasons being is they could help with that yards after catch and really be a vital player, play a big role on this offense next season. But I thought the point that you made about yards after catch and really Ken Dorsey's hand in helping the offense with spacing was a really good point to make, because you can talk about having and wanting more yards after catch, and Josh Allen can work at it and get better at it, which, like you said yesterday, anything that he's worked on, we've seen him improve the season after, and I totally believe in that. But the spacing that goes into yards after catch and being able to pick up 2, 3, 4 yards, 5 yards after the catch, it's easier said than done in a way that the field needs to look.
Yeah, because everything's tight out there. Just ask any receiver. They'll tell you. Space is at a premium, and especially when you're down in the red zone and there's literally no space. You're not looking for yards after the catch down there, obviously, but between the 20s, it is still a challenge. And if there's a way that Dorsey can facilitate more space for the main targets to get more yards after the catch is made, all the better. And if memory serves, the Bills were 30th in yards after the catch in 2020. They got a little bit better last year. They were ranked 20th in yards after the catch, but that's still bottom third of the league, and we know they want to get better in that area, as they do in all areas. We wanted to pass this along because the track and field championships are going on out in Oregon, and there was a record broken that stood for 30 years. The 200-meter American record previously held by Michael Johnson, who was big in the 96 Olympics. As you know, he had the gold Nike shoes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was beaten by Noah Lyles yesterday, who in just 200 meters blew away the field. He is like 5 yards clear of everyone in just 200 meters. And I've got to say this. In a race, look, I know you and I did a little high school track in our time. By no means are we.
No.
You know, we're strict amateurs in track knowledge. But all I know is this. A 200-meter race is not very long. And he's racing against the other best 200-meter sprinters in the world. And he just smoked them by 5 yards in a 200-meter race. You know how hard it is to get that amount of separation in 19 seconds? 19.31 was his time.
That's insane. You break that down to a 100, how fast you're running a 100 in. Woo. And he didn't even look tired after that.
I don't know if I could run a 100 in 19.3 seconds.
Well, yeah.
That's just, this guy's doing 200. But, I mean, he comes off that turn, and it looks like he's shot out of a cannon. And I mean, these other guys are moving. And it's just like, it's kind of like some of those Usain Bolt races, you know, when he's that much further ahead of everybody. I mean, he is crushing it.
Cruising. Dang.
It was a hell of a race. Like, there are, and I don't know about you, Maddie, but like, when I watched the Summer Olympics, I don't know. Maybe it was because I grew up watching Carl Lewis, you know, 84, 88 Olympics. And he was amazing. I don't know. I'm fascinated by how fast people can run. It's amazing. And I am glued when you see races like this. And, man, I can't imagine how it feels when you do all that training for all those weeks and months and years and you run your best race in a final. That's just got to be, you know what I mean? It's like hitting a grand slam or it's like, you know what I mean? You get a hold of one. You can relate to that. You played softball. You get a hold of one, it just feels so damn good. I got to imagine that's what it felt like for Noah Lyles yesterday running that 200.
And how all that work. I mean, there are a few sports that come down to you put in a year's worth of work into something that lasts 19 seconds.
Right? I mean, that's the other thing, too. It's over like in the snap of a finger. But so many – over the years, if you watch enough track, you see so many things go wrong. You know, you bad start out of the block, or you hit a hurdle, you know, with your heel or your foot, and it slows you down, and you lose by a tenth of a second. Like, all those kinds of pitfalls can – or you pull – God forbid you pull a muscle. because you're running your absolute fastest. You're pushing your body to the absolute limit to run your best race in a final and break an American record that stood for 30 years. Man, hats off to you, Noah Lyles. Fantastic race yesterday. I was impressed. Color me impressed. That stadium is really cool there, too, in Oregon. I guess Nike put like $275 million up to renovate the thing. And they say there's a section at the end of the hurdle race where the contour of the seating kind of lifts the viewer up. So they almost feel like the hurdlers are going to like run into them at the end of the race. That's like, it's like a visual illusion almost that they create over there with the way they have the contours of the seats. I don't know. I got to get out there at some point. That might have to go on my bucket list just to watch, like, even the U.S. track and field championships that usually happen out there in California somewhere. I got to get there. I got to watch it. It's just fascinating to watch athletes of that caliber. Just amazing. What did you think? That was the first time you watched that race.
That was the first time
I purposely didn't want you to see it because I wanted your reaction.
To type it up and look at it. Amazing. I think races are fun to watch, too. Summer Olympics, I'm all down for that. Working at the University of Tennessee, we had a couple athletes that were on our track and field team.
Oh, yeah. SEC track and field is no joke.
That have been in the Olympics and have done great for the university. And it was always fun to watch track meets and stuff at the university. I would go up and sit in the stands and cheer on our guys and watch girls. So I can never run that fast. I'm way too short. My legs
are way too short.
So props to the people who can do it, man.
That's great. It's fun to watch. No doubt about it. All right. We got to take a break here. Second hour of the show, more of your phone calls. So those of you holding at 803-0550, we are here to answer your questions on the Friday Fan Mailbag. More answers to come for you here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve!
A balloon.
Steve! A blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Hey, Bills Mafia. Maddie Glab here alongside Bills insider Chris Brown, and we are counting down to training camp. We can't believe week one is just a couple months away. We're looking at some of the biggest storylines, and one of them is definitely a big question for this team. Super Bowl or bust? And we're not going to relive it all because we know those memories are still haunting us a little bit from what happened last season. But the Bills suffered that heartbreaking loss, overtime loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, 42-36 in the divisional round. And thankfully, there's new overtime rules this season. And hopefully that loss won't haunt us for too much longer because of how successful this group was last year. Let's take a look at 2022. There's big expectations for this team because of what they did last season. So first off, explain why these expectations keep getting higher and higher for this team.
Well, I think it's because a lot of people on the outside looking in saw a football team that was clearly playing its best football at the end of the season. They were a healthy team, and I don't think there was any other team playing more consistently than them. It's just they were victimized by an overtime situation on a coin flip and then didn't have a defense to stop them, you know, at the most crucial time of the game. But I think dollars to donuts, most people felt, hey, that was the best team in football last year. They just ran into an unfortunate set of circumstances. That's number one. Number two, the roster, you could argue, is even stronger than the one they put together last year. They addressed one of the few weaknesses on the team, the pass rush, by getting one of the best pass rushers of a generation in Von Miller, and they fortified their defensive interior with players that you could argue are even more athletic and more playmaking in nature than the ones they had last season. So those are just two small reasons, not to mention their top two draft choices in Kyrie Elam and James Cook were expected to be on the field early.
One thing that plays into potential and expectations of a team is who's on their schedule and who's in their conference. With the way that it's stacked, do you think the Bills have the opportunity at the number one seed? Because this is something we've heard general manager Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott talk about, you know, number one is being that number one seed, having the playoffs run through Buffalo. So with the way that you look at the schedule, with the way the teams are competing in the conference, or that we anticipate these teams will compete in the conference this season, Do you think the opportunity is on the table and on the take and for the taking?
Yeah, I think the opportunity is most certainly there. The first seven games are a bear.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough stretch right from the jump. You got Rams, Titans, Ravens, Steelers, Browns, Packers. They're all mashed in there in the first seven games. You come out of that 5-2 or even 4-3, which I know sounds strange to Bill. Hey, I thought, come on, we're not running the table? What's going on? No, I mean, you come out of that gauntlet, 4-3, 5-2, you really are sitting pretty on the back half of your schedule because it gets considerably easier after that. That's number one. So that you get over that hump, you're in really good shape. But their division is still one that's in transition, Maddie. The Dolphins, the Jets, and the Patriots, they're just not in Buffalo's class. You could argue Miami has closed the gap, but they're still not there yet. The Jets are still rebuilding, even though they did some nice things in the offseason. So the Bills should win the division.
Yep.
So that's step one. But yes, you've got to rack up wins when you can get them, particularly against AFC opponents. And it looks like the Titans have slid back to the pack. The Steelers have a muddled quarterback situation. KC is in a loaded division where they're going to probably beat up on each other a lot, and you can argue they've taken a step back by trading away Tyreek Hill. So there are a lot of reasons to believe the Bills could very well put themselves in the driver's seat this year for the postseason.
Yeah, it's just tough to look at those first six, seven games and think, how do they make it out of this alive? Because every team needs a little bit of that warm-up, but they're not going to get that warm-up. And maybe this team doesn't even need a warm-up because of how many seasons several guys have been together and the added firepower in players like Von Miller. So we'll have to see how they start in those first few weeks. But as we consider all of this and put it all together, do we think this is a Super Bowl-caliber team in 2022 with the pieces they have and the schedule that they're going to play?
Yeah, I mean, you got to play who you got to play. It's what are you made of? Mm-hmm. And I think this is a roster that, as we said, is probably even stronger than the one they had last year. I think it's deeper, and I think it's more talented, particularly in their defensive front. And then you look at how they've retooled their offensive line. I think they've made a point to be a little bit more mobile. I think new offensive line coach Aaron Cromer is going to want to employ different blocking schemes through the course of the season, maybe from a week-to-week basis. So you need some players that have some mobility so you can execute more stuff out on the edges where you can take advantage of the speed that you now have on the offensive side of the ball. And I think also, Manny, this is a team that has been battle-tested. They've had to endure some very hard playoff lessons each of the last three seasons, as we have witnessed. And I think because of that, there is an added motivation, a bigger chip on your shoulder, whatever cliche you want to use. There is a burning desire to finally get over the hump. So you roll that into all the talent they can put out there on the field. Yes, yes, they're a Super Bowl caliber team.
Yeah, I have no problem saying that I expect this team to be in the Super Bowl in the 2022 season. They know what it's like to be in those big games. Like you said, they've suffered those losses, and every year that chip keeps getting bigger and bigger. And after the last few seasons, I think Super Bowl is just the natural next step. It's a little crazy to say natural next step,
right?
But they've been there. They've done that. They haven't been to the Super Bowl yet. And I think that's how this team can take the next step. And I think a lot of us are expecting that for the Bills this season. All right, for more videos and content as we continue to count down to Bills training camp in Rochester, head to BuffaloBills.com. For Chris Brown, I'm Maddie Glab.
All right, so that's Super Bowl or bust for the Bills. That was kind of Maddie and my look at it, and I'm sure you guys are hopeful that it looks all good and things come up rosy once the regular season gets underway. But for now, we do want to get back to the phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, as the Friday fan mailbag is open. Any and all questions you have on the Bills or the league at large, fire away. And waiting patiently has been Jim in Penfield. Jim, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, Chris. Hi, Patty. Glad to see you guys. My thing is on Deshaun Watson, this crap fest that's going on. Supposedly the arbitrator is going to decide this. But all of a sudden we're hearing about a possible 6 or 8 week suspension. My opinion is that if this happens, the reason it's happening is because the Browns management has gotten involved and they don't want to lose money. Because who's going to lose money if he doesn't play? They are. He's guaranteed his money. They are not. That's my opinion, and I'll hang up, and I'll let you guys have free run with it. Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, Jim, because the way the Browns structured Deshaun Watson's contract, he was only going to make $1 million this year. So of that $230 million contract, he was only set to make $1 million this year. And the reason they did that is because they were anticipating a suspension of some kind. So they said, look, let's backload the contract. So if you are suspended this year, you don't lose much money. The Browns, quite frankly, once they committed $230 million to Deshaun Watson, it was over, said, and done as far as the money they were going to lose. They're going to lose it whether they're paying him or not. So Watson, the way the contract was structured, certainly favors him keeping almost all of that money, assuming a suspension doesn't linger into next year. And I don't think any of us are anticipating that.
Yeah, I don't think we would anticipate next year. The Browns are smart for structuring the deal that way. It'll just be interesting to see how all of this unfolds, what the suspension looks like, if it's going to be 6 or 8, if it's going to be the entire season, what else plays out over the course of the next couple months. It's been a sticky and icky situation.
Yep.
I have a lot of things to say about it, but I'm just really interested to see what happens, what the NFL does with Deshaun Watson and his suspension.
See, and that's the thing that I think gets lost on some fans, because since the new CBA in 2021, Commissioner Goodell is no longer judge, jury, and executioner of league suspensions. The Players Association and the league agreed that in disciplinary situations like this, there would be an independent arbitrator that would hear the Players Association side representing Watson, and they would hear the league side represented by attorneys, and then an independent arbitrator would make their ruling, levy a suspension. That is how it's going here. It's not the league or the commissioner deciding what Watson's punishment is. It's an independent arbitrator, and some of the latest reports are that Sue Robinson, who is that arbitrator, is not levying a decision yet, because some are speculating they're trying to get the two sides to reach a settlement. The thing that worries me about a settlement is it's usually going to be less than what we all think it should be. That's my concern. And I think if it's 8 games, to me that's not enough.
Same.
If it's less than that, the optics are awful. Awful. Like, to say you're, you know, all about equity and inclusion and all that stuff and empowering women in this league, when someone like this, who's accused of what he is against women and his suspension is minimal, I got a problem with that. I do. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the punishment ultimately is, or if there is a settlement before a punishment is levied. Let's go back to the phones and to Alan in Lancaster next. Alan, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling in regard to a thought I have, an idea for an offensive setup for the Bills. That we want to confuse the defenses. And one way, a thought that I had of how to do that is to have one setup in which we use smaller, quick guys who are able to get separation, namely 5 guys, namely McKenzie, Diggs, James Cook, Crowder, and Tavon Austin. And the idea would be that Josh is going to be able to get the ball out very quickly with these 5 guys going out, because somebody's going to get separation quickly. And it would be something that all defenses would have to prepare for. Even if the Bills decide to only use it once or twice a game, you force a defense to try to use it. The Bills could also take advantage of something like this if they were playing a team that was putting tremendous defensive rush on Josh, that they could use this kind of a setup to get the ball out very quickly to not endanger Josh. So I wanted to know what your thoughts were about that.
You want to take a stab at that first there, Maddie? Thanks for the call, Alan.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back to what the Buffalo Bills had on offense, and I'm thinking about some quotes that Sean McDermott would say, kind of poke fun at, you know, he called the wide receivers for a couple seasons the Smurfs because they were all right, smaller and faster. So the Bills have been there, done that, maybe not in the way that you're explaining of how you would deploy these guys with the skill sets that they do have. I don't know if you're going to see five wide of every single small guy on our offense, but I do think you will see things that look like that because you have the weapons, you have the versatility, you might as well use it. So I could definitely see, and we've seen it before, I could see Diggs, McKenzie, Tavon Austin, we'll see if he makes the roster, right, folded in there as well. Jameson Crowder, sure. I don't know if they're all going to be on the field at the same time, though.
Yeah, the part of this, based on what Alan said, that fascinates me is the dynamic and the interplay between Ken Dorsey and head coach Sean McDermott. Because I think we saw last year, week one against the Steelers, Brian Daboll's game plan was to spread the field. They were going four wide, empty backfield, and the Steelers had answers for it, and it didn't work, and they lost the game. And after that, there wasn't a game plan really for the rest of the year, with the exception of times when they were down by a lot and just had to start throwing the football and spread the field out in those situations, where their defined game plan was, let's just spread it out and throw it all over the field. It went away after week one. And I have to believe that Coach McDermott had some input on that. So how does that interplay work between Coach Dorsey and Coach McDermott this year, if a certain given week comes up and there is a given opponent where Coach Dorsey says, we spread these guys out with our small, quick guys and we have them. They don't have any answers for us. Does Coach McDermott review the film and sign off on it? Or does he say, you know what? I'm not going aerial assault. Let's just throw it. I think we saw there was a dedicated commitment down the stretch last season to the run game. It produced results, and I think you could argue the Bills were playing the best football in the entire league at the right time, the end of the season. And that's why they whooped up on the Patriots in that first round of the playoffs. They were playing sound all-around football. They're still a throwing team, but while Alan, it sounds great and it's super attractive, it sounds fantastic, I'd love to watch it, I don't know if it's something they can rely upon each and every week. Could it be a package in a given game plan?
Sure.
Could be.
It's also not like the spread it out football is some super new term that defenses have no idea how to work with or what to do or what to throw on the field to combat a spread it out offense. Spread it out offenses are well known in the league. They've been around. The quarterbacks that like to do that, and defenses have now adjusted to the point where you can't necessarily spread it out like that too often anymore because defenses have been able to adjust and teams have been able to draft players to stop offenses like the Buffalo Bills and like the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's why you need to have a run game in there. You need to have something different in there because, like you said, it would be great to spread it out every single play, but based on how defenses look now and what they can look like now and what they can do, you can't simply do that every single play.
Yeah, and to Alan's point, more often than not, teams can't go 4 and 5 deep with elite coverage players in their secondary. So if you feel you have elite separators of the smaller and quicker variety, I suppose you could have a given advantage in a given week and, you know, deploy that kind of approach that you're suggesting, Alan. I just don't know that it's going to exist with the frequency that at least you sounded like you were hoping for. But I think it's something that's in Coach Dorsey's toolbox. How much he uses it remains to be seen. Let's go to Jim in Florida next. Jim, you're on One Bills Live. What do you got, guy?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Chris, for putting on some information about track and field. I was the track and field coach at Fredonia State for 25 years. Really appreciate the meet's a great meet. The only concern I have for the Bills this year is replacing Beasley because he was critical in our third down and long situations.
Yeah, Jim, sorry, you're breaking up a bit, but I got the gist of what you're after there. You're worried about replacing Cole Beasley, and as Maddie and I were discussing on the show yesterday, I don't think you have to worry. If there is any role, maybe on offense or defense, maybe on the entire team, if there is any role that I am not concerned about, it's the slot receiver role previously held by Cole Beasley because they have Jamison Crowder.
Yeah, definitely, and the caller alluded to, or what he was saying at the end there before he broke up, was the third and long situations
right.
that he was worried about, that Cole Beasley picked up a lot of the time when the Bills were in trouble and needed to convert on third and long. But you look up Jamison Crowder's average yards per catch. I looked that up yesterday because I was a little bit curious. Over the years that he's been in the league, his yards per catch average is higher than Cole Beasley's. Mm-hmm. I think last year he was down a little bit at 8 point something, but there's been years where he was averaging 12 yards a catch, 11 yards a catch. I think he stays around, if you're to calculate his average, I would say it's around 11 yards per catch. To have that in the slot, to have somebody like that, I think is going to help Josh Allen out a lot. You talk about the third and long situations. You want a guy who's averaging that yards per catch wise to be able to help your team convert in those types of situations, down in distance, things like that. He's not a new kid on the block either. This is a player who's been around. He was the guy in the Jets offense for multiple seasons. I think in 2019 he had over 800 receiving yards, had a big load in terms of what he was doing on that offense. He's not going to be the guy in the Bills offense because they have so many different guys that they can go to and look to. So I'm excited to see how they throw him in the fold there. We know the slot is an important position for Josh Allen and what he likes to do, though.
I think Cole Beasley's role was largely as a safety valve because Josh was confident that Cole was going to find where the void in the defense was. He's a former high school quarterback. He was really keen on where the space was, where to sit down, where to find the voids in a defense, and Josh trusted him. I think Crowder's got the same knack for finding space and knowing where to sit down in a zone call, knows how to get separation against man. And because of that, I'm pretty optimistic that by the end of this season, the second most targeted receiver after Stephon Diggs is going to be Jamison Crowder, just because the routes he's going to be running are shorter. Mm-hmm. It leads to more high percentage throws, more completions. And so I think his numbers are going to be pretty comparable to what Beasley's were. And in Beasley's 3 years here, he was the number two targeted receiver to Stephon Diggs and John Brown. So yeah. I expect much of the same for Jamison Crowder this year, just because of the way the offense has functioned the last 2 years in particular. And knowing Josh looks for that slot receiver to help him convert because it enables him to get the ball out fast. It enables him to move the sticks and stay on the field. So I think Crowder can have it. I mean, you mentioned it yesterday, Maddie. Every season of his 8 seasons in which Jamison Crowder has played, if he plays in 12 games or more, he has put up at least 50 receptions. The only season he did not put up 50 receptions was back in 2018, his last season with Washington, where he was injured and played in only 9 games mm-hmm. that year. Other than that, he's played in 12 games or more every season. He's had over 50 receptions. He's going to produce in this offense. Think about that. He produced in Washington, and he produced with the Jets.
Yeah. That says
a lot. Dude's
going to
light it up here, I think. I think he's going to light it up. No question about it. All right, we got to take a break here. When we come back, we'll get to more questions in the OBL Fan Friday mailbag that we have to answer. If we have time, we'll rattle off a little NFL true-false as well. Here next on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio.
some people have to leave the facility to ease their mind. You know, I have to come to the facility sometimes to ease mine. I'm extremely ready to get back to just being football and being the best quarterback and teammate that I can be for the Buffalo Bills.
You know, you want to be able to kind of throw all the paint on the palette over the course of the spring and then really start to chisel it down so that when you come back for training camp, you've got a good defined and clear plan as to how you want to attack things.
Listen to me and listen to me only. Today is Thursday. We need to work. Work on three, work on three, one, two, three.
Play some football, kids. Water shower for the guys that are playing football.
Hey, I like the extra steps, though, for your Fitbit.
That's all I got.
One, three, one, two, three, win.
Together, everyone achieves more. Team.
All right, that's a trailer for the latest Embedded. Is Josh Allen a dork or whatever?
Together, everyone achieves more.
Together, everyone achieves more. Team. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
He's such a dork. He's a lovable dork, but he's a dork. And we already heard Dawson Knox in the comment he made about Josh being basically a 12-year-old every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, I did watch the latest Embedded episode, which is out and available for you on the Bills YouTube channel.
Check it out.
It's also up. There's a link on BuffaloBills.com as well, and it covers the majority of the offseason since the players came back in the spring. So there's a nice little piece on when Von Miller took the young defensive ends up to his pass rush summit in Las Vegas. There's coverage of that in there, along with Micah Hyde's charity softball game, as well as some other stuff from OTAs and minicamp, guys just messing around with each other. So, oh, and it also had Isaiah McKenzie's appearance on America's Got Talent when he was with the Players Choir. So there's some good stuff in there. Good behind the scenes.
It's been a busy off season for these guys. It feels like it flew by. I say this every year, but I feel like it was April yesterday when the guys were just reporting back for workouts and then OTAs and camps everywhere. Really cool to see a lot of our players head out to Von Miller's camp out in Vegas. I think those guys took a lot from it. I also think, yes, they have been with Von Miller at OTAs and mini camp because he was around for some of that. But I think it's different when you take those guys off of the Bills practice field or out of Orchard Park and into Vegas, where not that coaches are a problem or anything, but just where they can be together with just Von and some of the younger guys.
One-on-one.
Von doesn't feel like he's maybe needing to pick everything up on the playbook because this guy is learning a new defense while he's also teaching a lot of younger players. So really cool that they could go out to Vegas and do that with Von. What the younger guys have said about Von. I mean, they've been asked about what he's taught them, what it's been like to practice with a guy like Von Miller, and they've all had really great things to say about the amazing, amazing pass rusher that the Buffalo Bills got.
So check out Embedded. Oh, yeah, there was also a Deion Dawkins charity function. They were playing cornhole together. Some of the trash talking there was pretty good, too. So check it out, Embedded.
I went to that cornhole tournament.
It was
played
raining,
in it.
Right?
It was raining. I played one game and we lost 22-0.
Oh my lord!
Or 21-0, whatever you have to score. But
yeah,
we didn't get a point.
Wow!
It was terrible.
Oof.
I was like hitting people next to me. I was not
Maddie,
on my...
from a softball background.
Bags.
Well, you weren't a pitcher though, were
yeah,
you?
Yeah, cornhole bags. I say bags, but
because I'm thinking of the underhand toss, like that would be right up
your
alley.
I was not a pitcher.
You weren't a pitcher.
I am
okay.
A terrible, terrible cornhole player. If you need somebody to play cornhole with you, do not ask me.
Yeah.
Because I will lose the game for you.
So check it out if you get a chance. Buffalo Bills Embedded coming together. It pretty much chronicles the entire off season. Let's get back to the phones, though, as the mailbag is open, and we're here to answer your questions. So here next we have, who do we have here? We got John on a cell, I believe. John, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live. Is this John? Oh, is it Jack? I'm sorry. It's Jack.
Okay. Yeah, guys. What do you expect from the preseason games when we get to them? Do you think Dorsey is going to go vanilla and just go for execution, of plays that the other teams have all seen before? Or do you think they might throw a bunch of personnel sets in there and some things that, you know, we wouldn't expect to see in the regular season, just to give them something to think about?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Jack, and thanks for the phone call. I would say this, based on what Ken Dorsey has said, the vast majority of the scheme remains in place. The protections are essentially the same. The terminology is the same. So knowing that, and the fact that we're pretty much going into like year four or five of this offense, I would say that there aren't too many secrets in terms of what the base stuff is that the Bills run. So I don't think they're going to be as concerned keeping it all close to the vest. I certainly believe if they're going to deploy personnel in a different way, they're not going to be revealing that. You know, if they're going to go five wide, or they're going to line up James Cook outside, or they're going to move Jamison Crowder all over the place, they're not going to be revealing things like that. But I think some of the base stuff that their offense has done that they want tied up in a bow for the regular season, they want to rep it in a game-like setting. So there will be some of that. But any of the new wrinkles that Coach Dorsey has,
seeing that until it counts.
That's staying in the back pocket.
One thing that I'm interested to see, though, because Ken Dorsey did talk about this, is choosing where he's going to be calling the game from.
Yeah.
Below or up high. So that'll be interesting to see whether you're watching the game at home or whether you're at the field to see, all right, is Ken Dorsey on the sidelines tonight? Is he up in the box tonight? You've got a few preseason games to work with. Does he rotate every game?
I think he'll try both.
So
he'll try both for sure.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see anything crazy out of the offense from preseason because it's preseason. But I think one thing that's going to be new to watch is where is Ken Dorsey and what does he feel comfortable doing?
Yeah. Let's go to Matt in Rochester next. What do you have for us, Matt?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I was listening to the show. I love it.
Thanks.
The question is, do you think Von Miller is going to break Willie McGinnis postseason record? I think he needs 5.5 to tie it.
Ooh.
So I think 6 would actually break it.
You know what? I am not. That's a good one, Matt. That's a good one. That's because it's right on the line.
Yeah, he's capable.
Right. But here's the thing, Maddie. If the Bills get the number one seed, that's one less playoff game that they would be playing.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he had 4 sacks in the postseason last year.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Rams have the number one seed? They did not, right? Did they?
I don't think they did.
I got to go look up the NFC standings from last year at the end of the regular season. I can't remember if they were the top seed. So he had 4 sacks, if I remember right, in the postseason last year. And I believe Matt said he needs 5.5. What did he say?
5.5.
5.5 to break the postseason sack record. Oh, that's juicy. So if they play divisional round, championship round, Super Bowl, that's 3 games to get 5.5 sacks. He could do it.
The Packers had the 1 seed.
Yeah.
The Rams actually had the 4
seed. So he had 4 sacks in 4 postseason games last year. Could he get 5.5? I think it's possible. But if the Bills are the number one seed, it's harder because it's one fewer game to work with, one less game to work with. So that could make it a bit of a taller task. I wouldn't put it past him.
I think
who am I to doubt Von Miller? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Best pass rusher of a generation. So, yeah, and I believe if Matt's aware of it, I'm pretty sure Von's aware of it. No, another record to put on the list. Yeah. Ooh, I like that. I like that he's got that motivation, too.
Seems like he likes breaking records, doing different things. I mean, what player wouldn't like that? But he's talked about winning another Super Bowl with a different team, winning 3 Super Bowls with 3 different teams. So I think Von Miller is up to date on some of this stuff and probably – maybe he has it on a wall somewhere in his phone somewhere, but I think he wants to accomplish anything and everything that he can and is excited to be on this team, potentially do some of that with the Bills.
Yeah. Herb from the mailbag asked, do either of you think Kyler Murray has earned the extension that the Cardinals gave him? I say no. He's a top 15 QB, not in that top of the quarterback chart. So he doesn't believe that the money fits the talent level of Kyler Murray. The thing that rubs me the wrong way about Kyler Murray is I don't, at least from people I've spoken to in the league, people that cover that team, he's not a team guy. He's a little bit of a me guy. So from a leadership perspective, that would sour me a little bit. He is ultra talented. There is no debating that whatsoever. He is undersized. He's not lacking in arm strength. We know that. Durability, though, could be a concern. So I'm curious to see how he performs now that he's gotten paid. You know, he's got the bag. How does he play now? Does it change? Does he elevate his game? Or does he take his foot off the gas? Be very interesting to see what his play on the field looks like now that he's gotten paid.
Yeah, was he deserving of an extension? Of course. I think you watch what a player does after they get that extension to see if they've actually earned that extension. We saw what Deion Dawkins did. He had a great year last year. Started off the season a little bit rough because of COVID, but then really, really had an amazing year. We'll see what Kyler Murray does. It's also hard with these quarterbacks who are wanting extensions, needing extensions, and are the next in line with what the quarterback market looks like right now.
Well, the money just keeps going up.
It keeps going up. And as a head coach, you're trying to do right by your team. As an agent, you're trying to do right by the player that you're representing. It would be hard for Kyler Murray to sign an extension and have it look a lot different than other quarterbacks who have recently gotten an extension.
And that's the thing. Like you say, you think he's a top 15 quarterback. The problem is the Cardinals view him as a franchise quarterback, and his agent says, well, if you think he's a franchise quarterback, we're not taking 15th best quarterback money. You're out of your mind. Every quarterback just backs up the Brinks truck and says, load it up. I'm the next guy to get paid, and they usually get top five money. And that's probably just going to keep on happening for all the franchise guys out there. Break time for us when we come back. What chances does Cam Lewis have of making a dent in this Bills roster? That's one of the next questions we'll be trying to answer here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, last couple of items from the mailbag. Jack asks, what chances does Cam Lewis, the UB kid, have to make the 53-man roster? He's gotten on the roster the last 2 years, played well in spots, but never out of camp. With Trey recovering, there are spots available for guys with experience, but a lot of people are fighting for one or two spots. You're right about that, Jack. I think Cam Lewis has a chance to make the roster again. Fourth-year player. He's been largely the backup to Taron Johnson in the slot. I think he's an ideal candidate for that again. We'll see where it goes. Maddie, you're going to take this one. From Gabe, is part of the reason Gabe Davis has gotten so many touchdowns relative to his total number of times targeted because he's been under the radar of opposing defenses? Should we expect him to draw better coverage this year and maybe not be a shoe-in to break out?
I still think he's poised for a breakout season. I mean, Gabe Davis did do a lot of things last year, but I think the load that he's going to get this year is going to be definitely an uptick from last year. So I would expect him to do much of the same, but maybe do a little bit more. He broke out at the end of last season, had some great games, but I expect to see consistency this year, which I would still call breakout year for him.
Yeah, I think if I have this right, he has 14 touchdowns and 70 career receptions. And he had 3 touchdowns called back on penalty in 2020. So think about that. He could have had 10 touchdowns his rookie year. That's pretty sick. He will be under the microscope a little bit more this year by opposing defenses. I don't think there's any question about that. But again,
tough to guard.
I'm going to reference Jamison Crowder. I think he's going to be drawing some attention inside. That should hopefully help him and Diggs outside. Next week, we are at training camp.
See you
and
in Rochester.
Listen to this. On Monday, we're going noon to 3, an extra hour of One Bills Live. We'll see you at camp at St. John Fisher University.